From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. John Edwards was rich, good-looking, outspoken for the poor, and at the top of American political combat, a former trial attorney and U.S. senator, on the ticket with Democrat John Kerry in 2004, giving Barack and Hillary a run for their money in 2008. But the backstory was sad and, we know now, tawdry. A good woman, his wife, dying of cancer. A hidden mistress and daughter and a slush fund to keep that quiet. Now he's on trial for campaign finance charges. We want clean campaigns, whatever that means these days. Do we want to make our campaigners for high office criminals? This hour on Point, the John Edwards trial and what it means for American politics. You can join the conversation. Should John Edwards be facing maybe 30 years in prison? What he did was cruel. Is it? Should we make it criminal? Should the government be prosecuting John Edwards? Should he be in jail? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Edwards, of course, big political figure out in public. This was last June in Winston-Salem. John Edwards talking with reporters after pleading not guilty to six charges related to campaign finance violations.
There's no question that I've done wrong, and I take full responsibility for having done wrong. And I will regret for the rest of my life the pain and the harm that I've caused to others. But I did not break the law, and I never, ever thought I was breaking the law.
And again in October.
I didn't violate campaign laws, and I never for a second believed I was violating campaign laws.
Well, now a jury's going to decide. We're 8 days into that trial and still going. There's a lot more to come. But already we see a lot on trial here. Joining me first today from Durham, North Carolina, is Hampton Dellinger, legal analyst and litigation partner with Robinson Bradshaw and Hinson. He's former deputy attorney general in North Carolina, sought the Democratic nomination for lieutenant governor there in 2008. He's taught election law at Duke Law School. He's been in the courtroom following the John Edwards trial. Hampton Dellinger, welcome to the show. Thank you very much for being here.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me, Tom.
What are the charges John Edwards is up on?
He is facing five counts of violating the Federal Election Campaign Act and one count of conspiracy. In essence, the hundreds of thousands of dollars that went from two wealthy Edwards friends and supporters to cover up his affair with Riel Hunter, the government believes constituted excessive and unreported donations to his campaign. Edwards says that's not the case.
What would or will a conviction depend on in terms of what needs to be proved?
Well, the government has done a good job, really saved by former Edwards aide Andrew Young's wife, Sherry, in terms of establishing that Edwards knew about the affair and may well have been active in orchestrating its cover-up. What the government has not done yet is provide a witness or any documentary evidence that Edwards knew or should have known that money to his mistress constituted a federal election law violation. They still need to show criminal intent in some way or the other. They've got a while yet left in their part of the case, but that's a big hurdle for the government.
The testimony so far, you say Sherry Young kind of pulled it out. This is the wife of the aide to Edwards. Why was the government in trouble before her testimony?
Well, her husband, Andrew Young, was billed as the government's star witness. The judge, Catherine Eagle, said he was the government's key witness. And, of course, he's also an author. He was on a book tour. He's faced a number of questions about these matters. And he could not keep his story straight under aggressive cross-examination by Edwards' lawyer, Abby Lowell. He really presented, I think, an unsympathetic portrayal of his role, and it came out that the lion's share of the $900,000 intended possibly to cover up the affair wound up in the Young's pocket and stayed there. It then was left to Sherry, I think, to really pull the government's case out of the ditch, and she got it back on track, making a compelling case that there was no amount of money that could come their way that would have made up for the pain and humiliation she and her family suffered at the hands of John Edwards.
Her husband actually claimed paternity as, I guess, part of the effort to hide all this, claimed paternity of the daughter born to Riel Hunter. That's pretty wild.
Well, that's right. And Sherry Young brought home, I think, in very human and compelling and relatable terms, the pain that caused her to be married to someone publicly identified as having an affair with Riel Hunter, as being identified as the father of Riel Hunter, John Edwards' mistress's child. And so I think that was a necessary component for the government's case. I just don't believe it's sufficient.
The $900,000, nearly a million, remind us of the big donors who coughed up that money?
Well, and it's interesting. It's Fred Barron, a wealthy trial lawyer and Edwards' finance chair, and then Rachel Bunny Mellon, the heiress to the Mellon fortune. And they are seen, discussed, I'm sorry, they're heard about, but mm-hmm. they won't be seen at trial. Fred Barron has passed away. Bunny Mellon, nearly 100 years old, is too infirm to travel to trial. So lots of discussion about them, but the jury won't see them.
What did they think they were giving this money for?
Well, that's an interesting point. The testimony so far is that both Barron and Mellon were told by Edwards and Andrew Young that this was for a personal matter, not a political matter. And so Barron, I think, had a greater window into what was going on. Mellon, I think, knew little to nothing about what her money would ultimately be used for. And so that gets to the government's challenge. Edwards told anyone who asked that this was for a personal matter. He told folks who asked that this was proper under the campaign law. And so the government hasn't been able to contradict those facts yet.
It is a fraught situation there, what with the death of his longtime wife, Elizabeth, who knew about this and was pained by it, and now his daughter sits there in the courtroom yesterday. Describe that scene yesterday, if you would, Hampton. The emotions seem very high.
Well, indeed. For those of us attending the trial as non-parties, your heart has to go out to Edwards' adult daughter, Kate Edwards, 30 years old, a Harvard law grad, a very composed and seemingly compassionate, but she lost her composure yesterday as there was detailed and dramatic testimony about the fights that took place between her parents over Edwards' philandering. And she rushed out of the courtroom in tears, was able to come back later. But she's there. Edwards' elderly parents are there each day. There's certainly a human side to this, whatever one thinks of Edwards as a politician, a parent, or a defendant.
It's hard to understand from the outside sometimes as we think about how the jury follows all this, how they're supposed to separate the emotional, difficult family scenes from the nuances of campaign law here. I mean, yesterday there was testimony about her, Elizabeth Edwards, collapsing on the ground at the airport in Raleigh and just so distraught, ripping off some of her clothes to try and get his attention, saying, "You don't see me anymore." What is the relevance of that for a jury considering a campaign finance charges trial?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I think the government, you know, has the right to get out there that there was an affair that Edwards was desperate to cover up, to their mind to save his candidacy, to Edwards' defense team's mind to save his marriage. But I do think the government's going to be very cognizant about not seeming to pile on. And the judge worked very hard to try to find a fair and impartial jury, and it was hard. They started out with 200 potential jurors to wind up with the 12 jurors and four alternates who now sit in judgment of Edwards. But the other point, Tom, you raise is a great one. I've taught campaign and election law for years. It is complicated. And the idea of 12 folks walking in off the street who can understand the Federal Election Campaign Act is hard to imagine that it's going to be an easy task.
Is the crux of it whether or not he misused campaign funds? Will they be debating whether these were campaign funds? Or is it all about whether this was a willful act of illegality?
Well, all of the above. You know, the Act's principle provision is anything of value used to influence an election constitutes a contribution. So that's broadly written. But as interpreted, the classic political corruption cases are the Blagojevich style, I've got a Senate seat for sale, mm-hmm. or Abramoff, you know, I need an earmark in exchange for campaign contributions, or money on the street that's not reported that goes to mm-hmm. get out the vote efforts. This case doesn't fit into any of those categories, and that's why I've been so interested in it. It's the first of its kind, and I believe after Citizens United, which has really opened up a wild west of campaign activity, it may be the last of its kind as well.
What do you mean by that? You've said there's never been a case like this before brought up on the issue of personal gifts used around campaign issues, and maybe never will be one again. Why?
Because and this is the real challenge for the government, we've had prosecutions for candidates lining their own pocket or excessive donations that went for express or explicit advocacy, mm-hmm. but the government has never brought a federal criminal prosecution based on the idea of some group of third parties giving funds to another third party non-family member.
So in this case, Riel Hunter, to keep her quiet.
That's right. That's right. Now, I find it, I'm a clean campaign guy and mm-hmm. have been active in efforts here in North Carolina. And, you know, we've had situations here where candidates are getting unreported flights, which gives them an advantage.
Sure.
But there was a jump the shark moment, I thought, a couple of days ago for the government when there was all this testimony about flights, not for Edwards, but for Hunter and for the Youngs. And so we're getting fairly far removed from core political corruption.
On the other hand, here's almost $1 million, and you see that scale of money floating around in a campaign season, and it's hard to, the sniff test, get your antenna up in a hurry. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point, and we're talking this hour about John Edwards on trial. Cad or criminal, sort of the question here, and whether we want a one-time presidential candidate facing 30 years in prison for using friends' money to hide an affair. John Edwards hiding as much as he could, denying as much as he could for a long time. Here he was talking with ABC's Bob Woodruff. This was August 2008, about 2 weeks after the National Enquirer broke the story of his affair. At that point, he admitted to an affair, but said he was not the father of the baby. He also denied making payments to cover up the affair, sought to discredit the Enquirer's report.
This is what I can tell you. I've never paid a dime of money to any of the people that are involved. I've never asked anybody to pay a dime of money, never been told that any money's been paid. Nothing has been done at my request. So if the allegation is that somehow I participated in the payment of money, that is a lie, an absolute lie, which is typical in these kind of public cases.
Yeah, well, pretty slick, pretty smarmy, and you've got to parse it very, very closely, and you still are going to find a lot of problems with what he's saying right there. Of course, now it's in a courtroom, and that's a different story. Hampton Dellinger is with us today, legal analyst in Durham, North Carolina. He's been in the courtroom following the John Edwards trial. With us also right now from Washington is Walter Shapiro. He's a veteran political writer, now covering his ninth presidential campaign. He followed John Edwards since he was a first-term Senate phenom more than a decade ago. He's now a columnist for Yahoo News, special correspondent to The New Republic, where he has welcomed the Edwards trial. Walter Shapiro, it's good to have you back. Thanks for being here.
Well, it's a pleasure. I mean, welcomed. I mean, I do not have a dancing on the political grave glee of this, because so much of the tawdry aspects of it, like the testimony yesterday about how Elizabeth Edwards reacted, is stuff that I wish were not in the public purview at this moment.
Yeah, fair enough. But you started out a skeptic,
yes,
about this, and you say you wrote in the New Republic, you've come around to thinking, well, no, there needs to be a trial here. We'll look at that, Walter. Stand by one moment if you'd be good enough. Also with us from Washington is Melanie Sloan. She's a former assistant U.S. attorney in the District of Columbia, now executive director of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. Nonprofit watchdog group works to hold government officials accountable for their actions. She's got a position on all this that might seem counterintuitive, that John Edwards should not be on trial. She'll explain it. Melanie Sloan, welcome. Thank you very much for being here.
Nice to be with you.
Walter, let me come back to you for a second here. I mean, your conclusion in the New Republic was, you had a lot of skepticism, but ultimately, yes, it's right to have a trial. Why do you say that, Walter?
Well, the piece in the New Republic came out the morning that the trial opened.
Mm-hmm.
So to some extent, things have changed a bit based on testimony since then. But the basic argument, and I had learned from very good sources, that Bunny Mellon, who gave $725,000.
She was 101 years old now, very close to John Edwards, had big dreams for his political career and shelled out plenty of money.
And she had given $725,000. And the assumption was that she had done it as a favor to Edwards to help him cover up an affair. I had learned, and I think the trial is almost definitely going to show, that Bunny Mellon had no idea that John Edwards was having an affair with Real Hunter or anyone else, and that she thought this was a campaign contribution, a roundabout campaign contribution. And therefore, under the very boring count two of the indictment, soliciting more than $25,000 from an individual in a presidential campaign, it is that count that I wonder if John Edwards is not guilty of. And so that comes down to a question of whether Andrew Young, his aide, was acting as John Edwards' agent with John Edwards' total complicity, or whether he was acting, he went rogue, sort of like Sarah Palin. But the point basically here is that if Bunny Mellon was asked to give $725,000 to campaign for campaign reasons, off the books, someone told her that this was for campaign purposes. And that would be, if true, a flagrant violation of the law, so flagrant that it justifies the prosecution and the circus atmosphere in Greensboro. Right?
Melanie, I'll come to you, but first on this Hampton-Dellinger, has it indeed emerged that that is definitively what Rachel Bunny Mellon thought she was giving $725,000 for?
It has not. Andrew Young testified on direct examination by the prosecution that he told Bunny Mellon that this was for a personal matter, non-campaign matter, and that Edwards did as well. I understand why Walter may have thought otherwise coming into the trial, as I did. There was a note from Bunny Mellon to Edwards suggesting that she could help for matters that could have some relation to the campaign. And I think that note is a troubling matter for the defense. But the evidence so far is that Bunny Mellon was told that this was for a personal, non-political matter.
Melanie Sloan, here you are. Responsibility and ethics are your thing. And you're saying that nobody's ever been prosecuted on facts like this before, that there's a novel theory of prosecution. And you're saying if John Edwards is convicted, it would be a miscarriage of justice. Why?
It would. And in large, there are several reasons. First, you need to have notice that something is against the law. Prosecutors in our country can't just decide something is against the law in order to prosecute somebody. John Edwards never believed that he was involved in criminal conduct. And there has been testimony that over and over he said that this was legal. And he had every reason to believe it was legal. There's really no prior prosecutions, and there's not even any action by the Federal Election Commission that suggests such actions would be illegal.
But he was a high-powered lawyer, and we hear ever since we're little kids, what ignorance is no excuse for breaking the law. Here he is, a big-time lawyer himself.
He is a big-time lawyer, and certainly ignorance of the law is no excuse, but the problem isn't ignorance of the law. The problem is that the prosecutors have changed the law without Congress ever actually going ahead and changing the statute.
What do you mean by that?
There has been no interpretation of campaign finance law that would, as Hampton said, have somebody, a third party who gives a gift to another third party, would call that a campaign contribution. The money never went into the campaign. The money wasn't ever used for anything that is traditionally viewed as a campaign expense. Get out the vote, you know, lawn signs, anything remotely advertisements.
What about protect reputation? He seemed pretty intent on that.
Well, I'm glad you bring that up because I think that's a good point. Right in the indictment, it talks about how a centerpiece of Edwards' candidacy was his public image as a devoted family man. So the prosecution believes that, therefore, Edwards was trying to protect this image by keeping Real Hunter hidden, and that's why the money is a campaign contribution. But that brings up a couple of problems. First of all, so Edwards was a family man, but let's say you had a candidate who was a known philanderer, and we've certainly seen candidates like that in the past. Would that mean that if a third party paid that person's mistress's campaign that person's mistress's expenses to hide her, it wouldn't be a campaign contribution. It can't be that it's only a campaign contribution if you're a family man versus a philanderer. In the United States, we punish conduct, not character. Secondly, under the prosecution's theory of the law, if John Edwards was trying to hide Riel Hunter, therefore, even if he paid her expenses, that too would have suddenly constituted a campaign contribution. He would have had to report that to the Federal Election Commission. But it was unheard of, the thought that you would have to report to the FEC money that you're spending on an expense that's not traditionally a campaign-related expense. In fact, there is a prohibition on using campaign funds for personal use. You're not allowed to spend your campaign funds on things like gym membership or haircuts or clothes.
So shutting up a mistress is you know, on its face, not a campaign contribution because you can't do it, but he was doing it.
Well, no, because you can, because you might have that expense regardless of whether or not you were a candidate. And in fact, it is quite believable that John Edwards would be hiding his mistress whether or not he was a candidate, because that's usually what people do when they have affairs. They hide them from their families. And he had a general reputational interest in any event in also hiding Riel Hunter. And all the evidence is coming out now that he was, in fact, trying to hide Riel Hunter from Elizabeth Edwards. And in fact, the some of the really tawdry evidence the prosecution is putting on, I think, only buttresses the defense's argument that John Edwards is trying to hide this from Elizabeth.
Certainly terrible reports of her upset, of how deeply upset she was yesterday, and understandably so. But Melanie, let me ask you, because your whole thing is responsibility and ethics, and this is not pretty no matter what. I mean, let's go a little deeper here. Why are you so resistant to this prosecution? Is it in the details of what's going on, or is there something about the criminalization of politics that worries you here? And it's interesting because you know, we've got people across the spectrum who are saying they're not so sure about the National Review is saying, let's not go here. I mean, I've got here, we've got lots of listeners writing in. One says online, would this question be asked, whether this is a worthwhile prosecution, if he was a Republican? And I wonder if he's, that question comes in part to you, Melanie.
You know, people should keep in mind, first of all, that there are some political issues about this prosecution as well. Mr. Edwards was indicted by a Bush holdover U.S. attorney, a Republican, who, after he announced the indictment, promptly resigned and announced he's running for Congress on a Republican ticket. And there's also the suggestion there's been longtime animosity between this man and Mr. Edwards. Crewe has long taken the position that the Public Integrity Section of the Department of Justice, which is responsible for this case, hasn't done a good enough job on prosecuting people. And in fact, I think it's odd that they decided to take this case, which is a novel case with no prior precedent, when, for example, they recently declined to prosecute Senator John Ensign, a man who was having an affair with a campaign staffer, married to a chief of staff, and then helped the chief of staff violate the lobbying laws to set up a lobbying business, even though the department had previously prosecuted another former congressman, Bob Ney from Ohio, in the Abramoff scandal with exactly that crime. So the prosecution over in the public integrity section seems wildly out of whack. There are some cases it's very hard to follow what kind of theory they have of who should be prosecuted and who shouldn't. The amount of resources that have gone into this case are immense at a time when the Justice Department is facing budget cuts and hiring freezes. The Justice Department also declined to have the trial heard by just the judge. They insisted on a jury trial, again suggesting they're trying to just inflame the jury. That's with the kind of evidence they put on yesterday, that they just want to see John Edwards prosecuted and go to jail because everybody in America hates him.
Walter, I mean, you've written, you know, you've been persuaded there are enough question marks surrounding Edwards' conduct to warrant a trial. But you say, you know, yes, he was an egocentric, lying, baby-denying cad who betrayed his dying wife, but you had earlier doubted he'd committed a crime. And with all, there's a lot of nefarious stuff going on, it often seems these days, Walter. Why this one? Do we need to prosecute here to keep some kind of plumb line running through our national politics? Is that where you're going?
Well, Tom, first of all, let me go back to something that Hampton Dellinger said earlier, that basically that Andrew Young indicated that he had told Bunny Mellon that this was for a personal matter. My understanding is that there are going to be other witnesses later in this trial who heard from Bunny Mellon what she was told. And I am told that this is not what she was told. I realize that. So I make that point because I think there is still a legitimate question to be resolved by the jury, whether this $725,000 was solicited as a campaign contribution. And if it was, that doesn't mean that John Edwards just brushed up against the line like so many in Washington do and got a little chalk on his pinstripe pants cuffs. That would be like as if John Edwards did a standing broad jump at Olympic levels over the line, heedless of the line. And at a point when our campaign laws are, alas, in tatters because of the Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court, feckless enforcement by the Federal Election Commission, and many lower court decisions that have gone beyond Citizens United, I think that if the facts of the case are as they seem to me to be, and again, I've not been in the courtroom, then I think it would be a justifiable prosecution and, if necessary, a conviction to send a message.
But if I may, may I interject and just answer to Walter, there are a couple of things that suggest, again, that these even Bunny Mellon and Fred Barron didn't intend them to be campaign contributions. First of all, both Fred Barron and Bunny Mellon apparently paid gift taxes on the money that went out. And you don't pay gift taxes on campaign contributions. You only pay them on gifts. Secondly, the payments continued after Mr. Edwards had suspended his campaign, again, suggesting that these were monies that were paid really to help Mr. Edwards out rather than to advance his presidential ambitions.
Hampton Dillinger, let me put a couple of listener comments to you, if I may, here. One writes, Tom DeLay was sentenced to 3 years in prison out on appeal for campaign finance abuses. Should we drop his conviction in jail time? Not so sympathetic to John Edwards. Here's another one. Nancy says, 30 years in prison for being a smarmy, narcissistic, opportunist, please, not unless we build a separate facility and we get to start populating it with all the other jerks like him. Because she says, go after Wall Street. How much did they get in the bailout? How much of that money was not just Bunny's money, but all of ours? I mean, people are looking at the details and they're looking at the big picture, Hampton, and looking for a sense of, you know, who deserves to be gone after here.
Well, it is interesting to me, Tom, that we have been able to hold so many politicians to account, and I'm all for aggressive prosecution of political corruption, and yet so few of the folks involved in the Wall Street shenanigans that there's been so much reporting about. I guess while I believe the government had every right to bring this case, although I am troubled by the fact that the prosecutor who drove the investigation and the indictment stepped down immediately to seek partisan office. I do think that is an inconvenient truth for the government. But ultimately, I think the most compelling part of the points that Melanie and crew have been making is the lack of notice. It's one thing when our politicians know what the rules are, and there's a lot of law breaking that goes on within the rules that are set out in black and white. Mm-hmm. But they're just, the fact that there's never been a prosecution like this before, and I don't know all the details of the delay case. But, you know, as much as I have taught election law, studied Buckley and the Federal Election Campaign Act, that I've just never seen a case brought on these type of facts. And I think with all the wrongdoing that we know we could go after, it is a question whether this was an exercise of the government's discretion that made sense.
Quick call before the break. Bill in Northborough, Massachusetts. Bill, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Let's start with the seriousness and let's start with lies. I can't compare this, let's say, to the Upper Branch mine disaster, where how many people died?
Plenty.
Nobody has gone to prison to date. Out in Utah, that particular salt mine where safety standards were violated, and this character, whoever owned the mine, I forget his name, but he tried to pass it off as an earthquake.
Okay, bad things happen, but don't we need law around campaigning, and don't we need it to be observed? Don't we need boundaries?
We need laws. We need boundaries. And if he has violated laws, by all means, send him away to jail. 30 years? No. I'm not buying that even slightly.
Yeah.
I mean, have cigarette executives that perjured themselves in front of Congress. None of them have gone to jail.
30 years is a big number. Bill, but let us halt it right there, if I may, for the moment. We've got a break coming up here. Hampton Dillinger, Melanie Sloan, Walter Shapiro, please stand by. We're looking at John Edwards on trial. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about John Edwards on trial, CAD or criminal, and whether we want a one-time presidential candidate facing 30 years in prison for using a friend's money, to hide an affair. You've got to care about how money is used in a campaign season. Is there the right proportion here or not? What do you think? Hampton Dellinger is with us. He is a litigation partner in North Carolina. He's taught election law at Duke University Law School, former state deputy attorney general in North Carolina. Walter Shapiro is with us. He's been covering John Edwards and presidential politics for a very long time, written recently in the New Republic that he was first skeptical but then thought, well, maybe he's too far over the line here. And Melanie Sloan is with us, executive director of Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. If there is a conviction here, she says, it would be a miscarriage of justice. Rose in Iowa City, Iowa. Rose, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Okay. What do you think, Rose?
Well, Iowa City, Iowa. That says it all. I'm lucky enough to get involved in the caucuses, and because of that, I'm lucky, maybe unlucky enough to meet many of the candidates.
Yep.
I met John Edwards, probably a couple of years before the caucuses.
Mm-hmm.
I worked for him on a grassroots level in the county in which I was living.
Were you swept up like Bunny Melon? How do you feel now, Rose?
Well, when I found out, I was very angry. But I don't think there was a person working for his campaign who didn't know there were problems within that campaign.
Well, problems like a big hush money to a mistress, like that kind of problem?
Well, no, I think, no, not like that. I think problems within the marriage, maybe problems. I mean, he was a good-looking guy. There was talk. You know, there definitely was talk.
What about prison time? What do you think now?
Now I think we need to separate the CAD from, he's not a criminal. This is outrageous, and I'm with Melanie. I agree with her wholeheartedly. When I found out about who was prosecuting this, I thought, oh, well, here we go, a Republican against a Democrat. While I was angry at his behavior, 30 years, the caller before me said, give me a break, I'm not buying it.
Yep.
I'm not either.
So don't go for it. We got it, Rose. Here's Matthew online says, but if someone has broken the law, regardless of social position, political level, justice must be served. Emily in Nashville, you're on the air, Emily.
Hi, Tom. I'm calling. I'm sort of on board with your previous caller and with Melanie. This case sort of, to me, reeks of typical Republican preying on human emotions to try and further their cause.
You don't have to be that sensitive emotionally to see that this was pretty ugly, and there's a lot of money there, not just emotion, right?
Well, it's true, but, you know, they talk a lot about, and your guest, Walter Shapiro,
mm-hmm.
who's on right now, when asked at the beginning of the show what he thought about it, a lot of his comments focused on the emotion of Elizabeth and cheating and all these things that particularly women should be pissed off about, but you see the woman who just called before, myself, Melanie, we mm-hmm. see through this. We can separate, you know, women's feeling of vulnerability and what's really going on in terms of him not really breaking the law, particularly since there was no precedent set. And also, you know, my big point mm-hmm. was there's no precedent for what he did so far, at least based on what your guests have said.
Okay.
But if you look at Stephen Fincher, who's a current congressman right now on the Financial Services Committee, taking money from Wall Street for his campaign, you know, I think that's really where we need to focus, and I think a lot of Americans would agree.
I don't know the details on that one, but look around. There's a lot of money. Walter, I mean, you start right off saying that you're a card-carrying member of the Betrayed by John Edwards Alumni Association. So how do you take that curve from that sense of betrayal to where you stand now, Walter?
Well, I'm a little surprised at where I've ended up. And that to some extent, I do think that John Edwards was a very slick con man. He conned a lot of people. I was one of them journalistically. I'm less embarrassed about anything I wrote than I am those couple of dinner parties where late at night with skeptics, I defended him. It is those dinner party private scenes that come back to haunt me. But there are still, I just want to make a couple of things clear. Mm-hmm. Number one, during the break, Melanie and I did a little research here, and we discovered that while Fred Barron, the John Edwards friend, continued to give contributions or support Real Hunter after John Edwards dropped out of the presidential race, all of Bunny Mellon's $725,000 was the seven checks, all of them were written while John Edwards was an active presidential candidate. Mm. So, again, I'm just, I can be convinced by facts that this wasn't the case, but I think there is, again, a plausible argument that that money was solicited from her as a campaign contribution, and the reason she paid the gift taxes is because she was so meticulously careful about everything involving money.
Well, Walter,
and what I yes.
Let me ask you, you know, what about the line here that says, well, you know, they should be going after Wall Street, or they should be going after, you know, other people doing work in the line in Congress. And those who say it's politically motivated. I mean, John Edwards is a rich man. He was way out of bounds in terms of how a person would like to treat his family and others here. But in his campaigns, he was standing up and pounding the podium for the poor in this country, and you've got some saying, wow, oh, figures that this guy's the one who ends up in the dock.
Well, I've covered nine presidential campaigns, and I can think of right now, there is no former presidential candidate with a lower sense of public approval than John Edwards.
Right
so
now,
the
you
idea
mean.
That the Republicans yeah. are now doing this in some subterranean way to make the Democrats look bad. How do I say this? I don't really think that John Edwards is up, if he is not convicted, for a major job in an Obama second
no,
term.
No, I guess you're right about that. Tom in Pownall, Vermont. Tom, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yep, thank you. You know, I just think it's kind of being blown out of proportion. You know, everyone just, like, acts so surprised. Oh, he was a presidential nominee. Like, so what? Like, I feel like there's a whole bunch of wackos that are running for the presidency, and I don't know why that matters so much. I mean,
this, Tom? I mean, he was actually on the ticket with John Kerry, right? If Kerry had won, he would have been vice president, you know, a heartbeat away from the presidency and all that. It does seem unusual to me to have people that high in our political world, after they run for office, to be standing in a courtroom in the dock. It seems kind of third world somehow. Now, maybe we need it, but it seems a little troubling that the law suddenly is going to come in and bite people who were that high for public office. On the other hand, this is pretty ugly.
I agree, and I'm just kind of waiting for Mitt Romney's scandal to come out. I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay. Hampton, what do you say?
Well, I'll say two things in defense of the prosecution. Mm-hmm. One, I do think it's a little strained to suggest that Edwards' only goal here was to save his marriage. This strikes me, to borrow a concept from another area of the law, employment law, a classic mixed motive case. He wanted to maintain the viability of his marriage and his campaign. And so I think the Edwards supporters will be on somewhat tremulous ground if they try to suggest this was only about his wedding vows. The other challenge for Edwards is the wording of the Federal Election Campaign Act. It is broadly worded, as we've discussed, anything of value going to influence an election. And so while Edwards has much to support the defense, and I still think the star witnesses could well not be Rail Hunter, not be the Youngs or John Edwards, but those former Federal Election Commission chairmen prepared to testify that even if you assume all of the allegations is true, they don't make out a civil violation, much less a criminal one.
You know, Melanie, what about this sense of concern about criminalizing the political realm here? I mean, it's tough business already. It can be murky, we're hearing from all of you in this hour. If you run for office and then you put yourself at risk of going to jail for decades, again, I don't know what the right answer is here, but that is not a pretty picture.
I agree with you. You know, this case is such an outlier. I think some of the callers have been right to focus on some of the bigger problems that we are seeing, where there is so much money flowing into our elections and so much of it of dubious legality. We have a federal election commission that has decided to really sit out this entire election cycle. It is split 3-3, Democrats to Republicans. It needs 4 votes to take any action. And it's refused to enforce even outrageous violations of campaign finance law. And by the way, the FEC declined to take action several years ago on this John Edwards matter, finding that it wasn't a clear violation of campaign finance law, and yet the Justice Department took it up. So we do have much greater problems. And to my mind, the much more significant problem that we see every day in Washington is politicians who are accepting campaign contributions in exchange for legislative action. And yet we don't see any prosecution of any of that. Instead, we're focused on John Edwards and his former mistress, and whether these two incredibly rich people, I mean, they were both billionaires, neither one of them missed the money at all, could give money to another third party, John Edwards' girlfriend. It seems like a silly case, it really, in light of all of the very serious wrongdoing that we're seeing in Washington that involves the American public really losing out while special interests are protected.
And yet, California, San Jose, California, Farshad, you're on the air. Thanks for calling, Farshad.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Big fan of your show. Thank you. I think as a whole, our election system has a problem. So long as you're pouring money into this, instead of having some limited public financing and equal airtime, this whole process is going to be fraught with issues and potential abuse of the system. In the age of Citizens United, you know, I think this is such a trivial and unimportant case that as a whole we should be looking at it. We should put the whole election process on trial. And that is my point. Unfortunately, I'm a couple of minutes late, and I'm really echoing what she was just saying.
No, that's fine. We're glad to hear it, Farshad. Clean up the whole thing, and yet it's not clean. I mean, here's a comment online. John says, too bad for Edwards that he didn't cover up the affair after Citizens United. His aide could have founded a PAC and then paid his mistress off, as long as he didn't coordinate with the candidate. Would have made it much easier. Let's go to New York, Albany, New York, and Charles. Charles, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I would just like to point out that I don't think this is very much a misuse of campaign financing, because covering up an extramarital affair is probably dollar for dollar more effective for a campaign than attack ads and TV commercials and the like.
So it looks like campaign spending to you? Is that your point, Charles?
Well, it would be disastrous if the affair was found out, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Hampton, how does that, you get to your mixed motives here again. I mean, it's hard to deny that it would have been bad for the campaign if it had come out. It sure looked like John Edwards wanted to keep it out of the public eye for political reasons as well as personal. But is that definitive somehow here, Hampton?
Well, and we don't know, of course, because we've never had a case like this before. But the caller raises a great point. There is this distinction between activities and funding that will gain you votes and then what we have here, which is activity to keep Edwards from losing votes. And I think there is a school of thought that in such an ambiguous area, all the past prosecutions have really focused on activities that were going to accrue to the candidate's benefit, get him more votes through ads, through poll workers or otherwise, as opposed to simply keeping him from losing political support.
Christine in Rye, New York. Christine, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Yes, I just want to say that I agree with the last couple of callers, and my point is, it feels like, yes, what he did was horrible, and is this an opportunity to just demonize him and throw 30 years at him because everybody just hates what he did? Is it so out of proportion? If he were somebody else accused of the same indiscretions and the same crimes, would his 30-year sentence seem reasonable?
Yeah, that's a question we may be thinking more about. I mean, Hampton, does that 30-year possibility, that's, you know, if he's convicted of everything, there's $1.5 million potential fine, he can handle that. And 30 years, how real is that? Is there any possibility that that will stack up? What, you know, on what so far seems to be emerging, what real kind of time do you think he might be facing?
Well, of course, federal judges now essentially have unfettered discretion in sentencing because the federal sentencing guidelines have been thrown out. So we can't say for sure. I do think, though, that if the jury comes back with a guilty verdict, he will face incarceration. It may be a couple of years as opposed to 30. And remember, John Edwards is nearly 60 years old. Yeah. So 30 years is a death sentence. But he has rolled the dice by taking this to trial. I think if there's any way he could have avoided imprisonment and struck a plea deal, it's something he should have considered hard, because there is no guarantee that he will walk away outside of incarceration if the jury comes back with a guilty verdict.
Walter,
interject there. Mm-hmm. There's literally no chance he's going to get 30 years in jail. If he's convicted, the judge would sentence him to jail time because he did already reject a plea deal that involved jail time. But we're really talking about a couple of years. Even if he was convicted of every count, while each count carries 5 years, you'd have to say then the judge would order them consecutively rather than concurrently, which is very unusual. And John Edwards has no, what we call in the prosecutor world, he has no prior record that would suggest that he needs that kind of sentence. So he doesn't have the criminal history for it. So he's likely only even
much less. But there could be prison time there. I mean, Walter, I've got on Facebook here, Andrew writes, "This case and Roger Clemens, what a waste of federal resources. As you know, Bush-era torturers and Wall Street bankers go free. On the other hand, people want politics cleaned up, Walter. And as you say, John Edwards may have jumped the shark here."
Well, I think there is that whole problem with John Edwards and steroids, and it has troubled me from the beginning. But the serious point is, I can't decide which are frivolous prosecutions and how to rank order what the Justice Department should do. All I do know is if John Edwards was going around soliciting $725,000, which has not been proven, this is so different in magnitude from other violations of the campaign laws that it is worthy of prosecution.
Well, there is going to be a jury in North Carolina with a lot of very difficult and emotionally trying material before it, as well as a lot of complicated information about election law and campaign finance, and we shall see. Hampton Dellinger is covering it all, and we're so grateful to you for being with us today, Hampton. Thanks for joining us from Durham.
My pleasure.
Melanie Sloan is Executive Director at Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. Melanie, thanks for being here today.
Very nice to be with you all.
And Walter Shapiro, who's covered it forever. Walter, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.